This is Louisa Beale with Radio Tacoma. This is a story. This is a story for everyone, everywhere. You, your mother, your father, your cousins, and even your dog or cat. We will all die sometime. Now, before you turn away in dismay, this is really a story of hope. And for me, this started with my sister Miriam. Miriam was diagnosed with leukemia in 2011 when she was 65 years old. When friends found out, they asked her something that we all ask. Is there anything I can do? We generally expect to do something like bring food or flowers, and if we want to go the extra mile, we can do laundry, clean house, or run errands. But Miriam always thought outside the box. This was one of her particular charms. She said, "There are two things you can do, donate blood and talk about death." These are some of Miriam's poems on the web if you are interested in knowing her a bit more. The website is poetryoftheordinary.wordpress.com. But my subject today is not Miriam. I am here to fulfill one of her requests by talking about death. There are two people who I wanted to interview for this, but they weren't able to for reasons that will become clear. I'm not afraid of death. I remember the words of my mother. She said, "I'm not afraid of death. I'm just afraid of not being able to breathe." Just remembering those words makes me want to take a deep breath. I'm not here to talk about how to or how not to die. We don't generally have much control over that. What I want to talk about is what happens after we die. But I'm not here to talk about any non-corporeal soul, spirit, essence, chi, animus, psyche, ego, id, geist, atman, ba, or ka. Those are philosophical subjects, and I'm here to talk about the nuts and bolts of death, or, more precisely, the guts and bones of death. Now, I am not a mortician, nor do I play one on YouTube. But there is a woman who is and does. Her name is Caitlin Doughty. She is an activist in the death positive movement and the author of Will My Cat Eat My Eyeballs? And other masterpieces. She founded the collective Order of the Good Death, which is on the web at orderofthegooddeath.com. The Order of the Good Death is a group of funeral industry professionals, academics, and artists exploring ways to prepare a death-phobic culture for their inevitable mortality. This collective promotes the concept that accepting death itself is natural, but the death anxiety of modern culture is not. You can find answers to your questions about home funerals, decomposition, green burials, and a better way of death. Caitlin is one whom I asked to interview. I received a reply letting me know that they have placed a moratorium on all events, projects, interviews for her until summer of this year. Understandable. Her latest YouTube post is titled, "Our Funeral Home is Overwhelmed with Bodies." My thoughts about my own death are really very pragmatic. For one, I don't want to be a burden on anyone. I want to make prearrangements so that there will be no surprises for those who have to clean up after me. My grandmothers were embalmed and buried, separately, of course. My mother and father were cremated. Separately also. But embalming uses toxins and takes up land space. It also includes cutting down trees for the coffin and using concrete for the vault. Producing concrete is very eco-unfriendly. So, burial, not for me. Cremation would also add to my carbon footprint. The incineration process emits many a noxious substance, including dioxin, hydrochloric acid, sulfur dioxide, and climate-changing carbon dioxide. Better than embalming, but still not my favorite choice. My fantasy death and disposal requires me to go out into the wilderness and to be eaten by a big cat, like a cougar. I love the big cats, and to be adding to their nutritional intake would seem to be a very ecological way to go. But there are several problems with that fantasy. One is getting to a wilderness. It's getting to the point now where just going to the grocery store is a major effort for me, and I can drive there. So hiking out to a place where there just might be a big cat waiting for me isn't really feasible. And even if I could make it that far, maybe the cat wouldn't be hungry that day. Maybe it would just eat my eyeballs. But the nail in the coffin to that plan was this. If anyone found my half-eaten carcass, the authorities would most likely go hunting for that cat and kill it. No, I couldn't have that. Back to the fantasy drawing board. I looked into green burials. Those are the ones where there is no embalming, no coffin, just a shroud and a big hole, like many cultures have done for millennia. Natural, or green burial, is a safe and legal burial practice that uses biodegradable containers and avoids embalming fluids and vaults. The burial area becomes hallowed ground, restored to its natural condition, and protected forever with a conservation easement. A green or natural burial means a natural body, no chemical preservation, placement in a biodegradable casket or cloth shroud, burial directly into the soil, no concrete grave liner or vault, no monuments to punctuate the landscape, and it is preserved as a green space for future generations to enjoy. Enjoy? Well, sure, why not? Cemeteries are a great place for a first date. I doubt that any big cats would dig me up, but it seems less likely to spew carbon into the atmosphere, at least not initially. I looked for a green burial site, and there are several in the Puget Sound area. Most are connected to traditional cemetery sites. The ones that were exclusively green burials were few and far between. I was considering going to visit those sites, but that was before the COVID-19 pandemic. My choices seemed limited. I was reminded of Monty Python's Undertaker sketch. It is worth a listen, unless you are faint of heart. But what I kept thinking was the Undertaker's question to the client.
We can burner, barrier, or dump her?
Dump her?
In the Thames. Did you like her?
I did want to spare my family that choice. Burying, even without embalming, takes up land and natural resources. Burning releases carbon and other stuff that I don't want to think about into the air. But dumping? That might be an option. This would be burial at sea. But it is fairly complicated for someone who doesn't have a boat and doesn't like paperwork. But the EPA has issued a general permit under the Marine Protection, Research, and Sanctuaries Act to authorize the burial of human remains at sea. There are many stipulations, such as the site needs to be 3 nautical miles from low water mark, and what the depth of the water must be in different areas along the U.S. coast, and requirements of what cannot follow the loved one into the briny blue. Since I am pretty hazy about nautical miles, and the only boat I have floats in my bathtub, I think this option is technically beyond me, even if my family was all in with this. But there are other ways to have a water burial. I first heard about aquamation from my veterinary journals. There is a company in Seattle called Resting Waters that offers this service for pets. And in 2019, this process was approved in Washington State for humans. Aquamation, or alkaline hydrolysis, is a gentle process that uses water temperature, pressure, and alkalinity to reduce the body to bones, which are then processed into ash-like remains and returned to the family in an urn. Although it does require electricity, it is much more eco-friendly than cremation. Then, as with conventional cremation, the question becomes, what do you do with the ashes? I scattered my mother. It fell to me because other family members weren't keen on digging their hands into Mom's remains. Or would those be cremains? But it was a windy day, and I loved to set Mom free and see her swirling up into the clouds. But as much as I loved it, I wouldn't want my family to do anything they did not want to do, like touching my ash. You could keep the ashes in a lovely urn on your mantelpiece. Then this urn can be passed on to your descendants, who can pass them on to their descendants, who kick the can down the generations until someone maybe can sell them at a yard sale. I have friends who get private cremations for their pets, meaning that they get the ashes back in an urn. Over a lifetime, that is, a person's lifetime, they can have 3 or 4 pets, and often more. Shelf space becomes limited. And, as with Mom's ashes, where do these go when you die? I got the ashes back from one of my dogs and decided to do something different. I took his ashes and mixed them with some clay, potting soil, and wildflower seeds and made seed balls. When they were dry, I handed them out to friends and relatives to scatter or plant as they saw fit. I took a road trip down the Oregon coast and back up the Willamette Valley, scattering some and giving some away. Now, every time I see a wildflower, I think of Loki. But this was very labor-intensive and still not a green option, especially considering the road trip. So, cremation is out for me. I was back to looking for a place to lay my biodegradable self into the ground when I read an article that changed my life. Well, at least it changed my death. The article was about a company called Recompose. The person I wanted to interview about Recompose is Katrina Spade. And, like Caitlin Doty, Katrina and her staff are fairly overwhelmed right now, and talking with me is not on their list of priorities. So let me tell you a bit about Recompose. Recompose calls the process natural organic reduction. It is also sometimes called recomposition, recomposting, or human composting. Well, this perked up my gardener's ears. Compost? How much more green can you get than compost? The process takes place in a closed, reusable vessel. It is not a type of burial because the body is not placed in the ground. Human composting creates an environment in which beneficial microbes thrive with a specific moisture content and ratio of carbon and nitrogen materials. This allows for the transformation of a body in about 30 days. The molecular processes that take place in a recomposed vessel are the same processes that break down a body during green burial. However, these processes typically take much longer in a green burial context. This is partly because not as much oxygen reaches a body that has been buried underground. But the best part for me is that with Recompose, at the end of natural organic reduction, all that remains is soft, beautiful soil. Human composting saves a metric ton of carbon dioxide per body when compared to conventional burial or cremation. That's equivalent to the CO2 emissions of 1,102 pounds of coal, driving 2,481 miles, or over 40 cylinders of propane. After over 7 years of design, development, fundraising, and collaboration, a bill to make this reality was brought before the Washington State Legislature. I remember watching Katrina Spade's testimony to the Senate. She was eloquent and convincing. so convincing that in May 2019, Governor Jay Inslee signed SB 5001 into law, making Washington State the first in the world to legalize natural organic reduction. Recompose started accepting bodies for human composting in December 2020, but is currently closed to at-need care except for pre-Compose members who joined before February 8, 2021. More on pre-Compose in a bit. The Recompose service includes a lot of things. It includes transport of the body to their location from within King, Pierce, and Snohomish counties. So no need to rent a U-Haul and risk being stopped by the police to ask you why you have a dead body in your vehicle. Don't even think of trying the carpool lane. It includes the laying in, which is placing the body into the vessel, which friends and family are welcome to join via streaming video. Maybe when the panic subsides, we might be able to be there in person to say goodbye. This also includes that transformation into soil via natural organic reduction and the paperwork involved, which would include the filing of the death certificate and an obituary posted on their website. After that, you also have several options. You can pick up the soil at the Kent location, and who doesn't need a yard of compost? You can donate the soil that was created to the Bells Mountain Conservation Forest or request a combination of the two. Recompose is very flexible. An example of this flexibility is Precompose. Precompose is the pre-planning for your wishes, and with Recompose, it works like this. Pay for all your Recompose death care at one time with a one-time payment of $5,500. Or pay $500 per month. You will pay off the entire cost in just under a year. Or pay $100 a month. You will pay off the entire cost in less than 5 years. Or pay $25 a month. You will pay off the entire cost in just over 18 years. Once you've completed payment on the full $5,500, the cost of natural organic reduction with Recompose will never go up for you, so long as you complete the payment before the death of the person for whom it was purchased. The money you pay into Precompose goes into a trust. The Recompose Trust participates in low-risk investments. Though rare, it can generate interest or income over time. If you change your mind about your death care wishes, you can transfer 90% of your payment plus net income to another funeral establishment. You can also change your plan after purchasing by contacting Recompose. There are lots of options and lots of flexibility. So, when they have the availability to accept additional bodies, the website will be updated. The website is recompose.life. But wait, there's more. There is more to pre-planning than arranging for your bodily remains. It is time to explore the Moose Plan. Moose Plan? Well, this is not about cremating or even composting a moose. This is a plan of what would happen if you were hit by a moose. For those of you not in rural areas, if you're hit by a moose, the moose usually wins. I like this name because being hit by a moose is much less likely than to be hit by a car. The reality of needing a moose plan became dramatically real to Radio Tacoma in the fall of 2019. This is when our programming director, Morgan Lambert, suddenly died. With him went his passwords, his contacts, and his notes on people interested in Radio Tacoma. So our board of directors asked our volunteers to share their moose plan. A good start, although only 4 of 12 key people have shared their moose plan. Pre-planning does no good if you don't do it. Part of a moose plan, besides passwords, is deciding on advanced directives. The POLST form, or the Physician's Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment, is a portable physician order form that describes the patient's care directions. It specifies the type of care a person would like to have in an emergency situation. It includes the following: whether the patient wishes for resuscitation, medical interventions, antibiotics, and artificial feedings. POLST represents your wishes as clear medical orders. POLST improves your chances of getting what you want and avoiding what you do not want at the end of life. For more information on POLST and advanced directives, you can go to endoflifewa.org. There may be other things that are important to be in writing besides end-of-life care and body disposal. A will can determine what happens to all your stuff when you die. It is best to have these things witnessed and notarized if there may be a dispute. When my mother died, we found a note from her. We know it was from her, not just because of her distinctive handwriting, but it was on a sticky note with a picture of a cloud and the saying, "The word according to Mom." It read, "When I die, I want to be cremated and my ashes scattered to the wind." All of us siblings were in agreement with that, but the funeral home was not. Her sticky note could have been written by any of us. So we had to find a time when all seven of us, yes, there were seven siblings, when all seven of us could get together. Two of us lived close. Three were about 20 miles away. One was in Tennessee, and one was in Buffalo. Then, once we figured that out, we had to find a notary for our agreement for her to be cremated. Thanks, Mom. To create a will, here are some of the things you must do. Keep in mind that I am not a lawyer, but here is the RCW 11.12.010. Any person of sound mind who has attained the age of 18 years may, by last will, devise all his or her estate, both real and personal. At a minimum, the document itself must be in writing, signed by the testator. I had to look that term up. It has nothing to do with testosterone, as I had thought, but rather it is a legal term for a person who has made a will or given a legacy. It must be signed in the presence of two competent witnesses, and the two witnesses must either sign the will or sign an affidavit in the presence of the notary that swears the facts needed to prove that the will belonged to the testator. But don't listen to me. Look it up for yourself. Or, better yet, get an attorney to help you. So, besides the POLST, the advance directive, and the will, what else should be in the Moose Plan? Well, that totally depends on each person. But what is most important is that you start this conversation with your family. That may be the hardest part of the whole process. If you have listened this far, I commend you. You are willing to face the inevitable. Your family may not be so willing. They may respond with horror or denial. They may respond, like my family, with jokes. That's okay. No judgment here. Reassure them that your intentions are good and bring it up at another time. One thing I did was to have my advance directives in a folder labeled Moose Plan and place it on the table. Then I went away for a bit and let their curiosity take over. You can't force them to talk about death, but you can let them know that you are willing to talk. And be ready to talk. Educate yourself about these Moose Plans. For more information on POLST and advanced directives, you can go to endoflifewa.org. You can get more information on Recompose at recompose.life. And you can get more information, a lot more information, about how to have a good death at orderofthegooddeath.com. So here's wishing you a good life and a good death. This is Louisa Beale signing off. I'm going to go hug my dog now.